I'm giving you all this gold, this comic gold.
I know, but okay. Welcome to the Feudal Podcast.
Tonight, we're going to talk about
The Dark Knight, the sequel to Batman
Begins.
Which came out today.
Right?
Yeah. It came out today.
This is a current day's review.
Yeah. Warning, we're probably going to end up doing spoilers because the way we like to do things is we discuss the whole story and in all of its conceptualizations and such. We may discuss a few other things, get a little tangential. That's just the way things work here on the Feudal Podcast. You're welcome to fast forward through it. Who knows, maybe I'll split it into two pieces if it ends up being long, but the whole goal is to get it out in a timely fashion in this case because it's something we're able to do. Usually the way our schedules work, we're not able to do this. End of speech. If you want to email us with complaints, comments, or criticism, please do at futilepodcast@gmail.com. And let's begin. First, I got a confession. I didn't have time to see it, so I figure I know enough about Batman movies. I'm good, right? I mean, I know Batman stuff. I didn't need to see it, did I?
It's not funny.
I'm just kidding.
That's not funny.
Of course.
Now, here's
the reason being, this movie is fucking awesome, but
it's not at all like a Batman. It's great.
Oh, I love it.
Okay.
Okay.
Last time we did a movie review, I completely deferred to you. And you talked for like 20 minutes nonstop, and I didn't interrupt. And you were wrong the whole time about Hancock, right? And then at the end, I was like, well, and then I did the you thing normally. Like, I normally give some glowing review of something, and you're like, yeah, well, here's some problems I made up about it. And then you say them, right?
Yeah.
We switched it last time, and it was miserable for me. It was miserable because I felt nobody listening to that thing will ever want to see the movie. Because the only sort of, like, positive thing that I could say about it was that I liked the flaws in it, and it made it more endearing to me.
No.
Which is the same thing that happened in Jumper, which I mentioned.
Yeah.
Jumper was a better movie than Hancock, for sure. Don't say anything. I was hoping... Well, okay, apparently you loved it, so that's fine. I was talking
about... Well, it's not perfect.
This was as near to perfect as any movie... Not just a superhero movie, any movie I've ever seen can be. I talked to Luke afterwards, and I gave some hyperbolic crap thing, like, this is so amazing, you know? And he, like, normally if I say that, he's like, nah, it was all right, you know, something like that. Or he loves something and I don't. And he said almost the same thing I did. Our emails crossed. He didn't even get mine yet when he sent it, because he saw it at midnight last night also. And I think this was hands down... just far and beyond the best superhero movie ever made, and possibly one of the best movies I have ever seen in my life. Like, that good. I mean, it's hard to say that in any movie where you think something is, like, not good enough to where you would consider it like a pantheon type film.
Well,
like
here's
when you watch There Will Be Blood or something like that, you notice from the very beginning, you're like, this is a complete work of like artisanship. You know, it's like, This is a craftsman at work making this perfectly detailed thing about this guy's life, and it was an incredible character study. And when this one starts, there's that amazing bank robbery.
Yeah.
In the beginning of the
which I screwed up on. I knew there was something about a 6-minute prequel prologue trailer thing, and I hunted for it, and I found it on the net. And I'm like, I gotta watch this before the movie. And I'm like, I sure hope that it doesn't turn into a Darjeeling thing where I've seen
it's in the movie. Yeah.
And then it's in the movie, and I'm like, whatever, it's still cool.
It was good.
I made a point. I watched the anime the night before,
and I purposely didn't read any reviews.
But I knew
that everything was positive, but I purposely didn't read reviews for this, and I didn't know what happened. So you'll be proud of me. I didn't spoil it for myself. I gotta say, the way it was set up. It wasn't anything like a superhero movie. It was like Heat. It was exactly like Heat. Which is exactly what Blaine said coming out of it. And I thought it, and I didn't say it because I didn't want to influence him. And he said, that was like Heat.
The trucks?
Yes,
the underground
like
things?
Heat. The whole movie.
The bank robbing?
This was an epic crime drama that happened to have a superhero in it.
Exactly.
And it was an American tragedy. This is an absolute epic drama film, is what it is.
It works on that level. Yeah. It honestly does, and so it transcends the superhero genre and is kind of hard. Now, I mean, we may all be under some kind of temporary whatever, like having just seen it all high off that, and I don't doubt that. Obviously, like I said, I'll calm down in a little bit and we can go into minor little flaws here and there. I mean, the mayor had guyliner on and looked like the bass player.
He doesn't have guyliner. That's Nestor Carbonell. His eyes always look like that.
And that was kind of
weird. He was in Suddenly Susan.
Yeah, I know.
He always looked like
he's
that.
On
he's
on Lost,
always
too.
Had, yeah, he's got, the, he's got eyelashes. That's what all That's it is. He's weird. Got dark eyelashes, yeah. He looks like.
And yeah. A handful of other kind of dumb things. But by and large, all you really need to say to anyone is, like, if they're like, I like the first one, you know, I like Gary Oldman and everything.
I loved the first
one. And all you have to say, is, like, more Gordon. And they were like, awesome. Yeah,
this was so much better. It had more everything. I mean, they toned back on Batman a little bit, which I was afraid was going to happen, but it didn't end up hurting it at all. It did not end up hurting it at all.
Of course not. Because Batman isn't even really, Batman is a detective crime story.
Yeah.
And the whole being, wearing the suit and punching guys and stuff has to happen maybe two or three times in the course of the movie,
yeah.
In little action punctuated sequences. And the reason why, like, you would complain about something like Batman and Robin or the Joel Schumacher ones is because when that does happen, his whole take on what a comic book movie is this completely overblown, ironic.
It's a kids thing.
Kids. Yeah. Well, it's not even. Which
but it's
is fine.
PG-13 kids thing.
It's yeah. They're funny books. For that's fine. But the style for Batman doesn't work that way. And so he just got the style wrong. So I don't think that. And you know, obviously the structures of the stories were not as well made as this.
Honestly, I think that the tone of this one, in that he's somebody who's a necessary evil at times and pops up when needed most. This more fits the Batman. The year one thing.
Oh,
the year
absolutely.
One comic. Because just taking the basis of the year one thing and saying he went off and traveled overseas and came back, that was that. But then they completely changed everything except for that to make Batman Begins. And this had so much more to do with other characters. There was equal time for everyone. Bruce Wayne
it's
was
much
was,
more a continuation of year one. And all the way till the very end, which is almost exactly taken from the third issue of year one when they're after him.
Yeah.
Full on after him. I mean, really, year one does not have any of his backstory in it. He arrived.
No,
yeah. He arrives.
He tells you. He says he came back.
He's
and
been
that's it.
In year one. It's ridiculous. It's something like he gets back. He's 25 years old and he's been gone for 12 years.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, he left when he was like 12 and started doing this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's a lot about Gordon and all that. And this one is more about Gordon. It's more about the cops and sort of a little bit about corruption and stuff. The whole arc with Dent is very interesting. Especially as his they did something with him very cool where they sort of paralleled him with Batman, which I had never quite, I mean, they've played with that before in other iterations with Dent, but never really this well.
It was
I
just,
think.
And never, I mean, I've read all the different comic incarnations and the different, you know, they have a Dark Knight and a Detective Comics and a Batman, you know, they've got a whole bunch of different titles, like they do for, like, Spider-Man
and
so on.
And they're somewhat interwoven, though.
They are mostly somewhat interwoven.
Sometimes they have
standalone
stories.
Generally, they take
stories.
Their own storyline.
Yeah.
They're all in the same universe. Sometimes they're in different DC universes, the multiverse, whatever they have. But never before, I think, have they really examined the whole thing with him being... I think it was utterly brilliant to put him as someone who Bruce Wayne thought he was going to leave this life for, because this guy was going to make a difference. And, you know, this is where we get into the spoiler stuff. I thought the most genius thing about it, and the only time I was... I mean, you get surprised by twists in movies... Sometimes, but most of the time, if you're an avid movie watcher and you're a film student, etc., you get to see twists coming almost always, and you think, well, what's going to be the twist, right?
Well, but, I mean, do we want to, like, cover, like, start from the beginning on this, maybe? And
I don't
so
know.
We're doing, because the way it's structured is really well.
It is, but just the fact that that they have him choose the person he chooses when two people are about to die.
Yeah.
After, I mean, that was truly surprising to me, and it instantly made his character so much more truthful because he's been, you know, he pines for the girl in a like kind of off-kilter way the whole time. Like, that's the reason why he wants to quit what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But he also finds it even more important that the city is saved.
Yeah.
Because that was his dad's thing and that became his thing. And he would quit it if someone else could pick it up, you know?
His dad had to go become the new ADA for Law and Order.
Right, exactly, yeah. So he would do that. So go ahead, get into the movies.
Okay, so where do we start? Okay, we start with the bank robbery, totally Heat style. The thing about this movie that when I saw the first few trailers, I was looking at it, and why I didn't... I'll only watch the first trailer, really, and I was not optimistic because it didn't... the first one had a decent bit of the noir dark aspect to it, and this one just... It just doesn't have any of that, and as I'm finishing it, watching it, I'm like, this works, because this is a real world. Mm-hmm. This is like, it's not trying... It's a dramatic crime world, but it's not bogged down with rain and darkness and noir.
Because you put stuff in daytime.
Yeah, he puts so much of it. The beginning is just buildings. There's nothing indicative.
It makes it a real city.
There's none of this like huge like gothic cathedral stuff. I mean, there's some of that to Gotham City, but like it's just like it just looks like a regular like downtown with skyscrapers and shiny buildings. And then a bank robbery happens, and it goes, and it's so well structured. And I mean, there's the first twist there. Where you find out who, you know, the Joker's, you know, been playing all this really well on his own. The guy from Heat is the guy in the bank, and then he gets killed. And then that's all well and good. And then the proper story starts, and you get Scarecrow in it. To kind of tie up the loose
it
ends.
It does. It's almost the only link between the first two, besides all the main characters. Like, and it's just, I think it's supposed to show you that this is the evolution of this storyline.
Yeah, exactly.
It goes from that to this, and this becomes a real thing now.
And so we now know that Scarecrow is going to be locked up or whatever, and then it just goes straight into the mafia thing. It's just a crime story at that point. They're like, okay, we've got a tie to the money. This guy's been robbing the money. We've been irradiating it. They've been working with him with Batman for a while. The commissioner has not. He's not the commissioner. He's the lieutenant. He's got his own major crimes unit. Mm-hmm. With people that he handpicked, and there's a new district attorney in town because the old one was killed in the last movie. Right. If you remember, he got shot in that crate. And I'm not sure. It's tough to figure the timeline on this. Some time has gone by. It's not like the day after the first one.
No, I believe it's actually probably something like a year or so.
It's something about that degree because Dent would give us an indication because when Bruce Wayne meets Dent, because he's trying to figure out if Dent's a good guy for real, he does the whole, I'll be the guy that talks bad about Batman and see how Dent talks about him. And Dent defends him and has the whole thing about, like, in, you know, the Roman Empire would appoint one man and, you know, the hero would then become the tyrant and that's an interesting take. And then he decides, okay, fine, you know what, I'm going to throw you a fundraiser. And he's like, I've already been elected. I'm not running again for, I think he says 3 years. So if it's a 4-year term for district attorney, then
said 3 years.
It's probably been about 1 year.
And then he had that line where he said, you don't understand, if I throw you a fundraiser,
you'll never need to run for anything again. Doing his Wayne thing, you know. Yeah. This version of Wayne is much less, at least outwardly less intellectual. He is the Wayne Playboy character. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got some bitch on his shoulder, or two, or three in the case of when he shows up in the helicopter. So he can only have, he has one that's separate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got the wing one, and then he's got two one on each arm.
In case he loses one of the ones on his arm. Yeah.
But basically the story starts with the bank robbery, this bank robbery that the Joker's doing, and it becomes clear that the Joker is... he's like Omar from The Wire. He's robbing from the criminals. This is a mafia bank that you get the information based on when the robbers are doing their thing. They're like, well, what was it? It was a charged vault. And it's like, what would that mean? And it means it's a mafia bank. And the main guy running the bank has a pump shotgun, you know? And that's like just crazy.
William Fichtner.
Yeah, William Fichtner from Heat.
Mm-hmm. And every other movie ever made.
And lots of movies. And
mostly
Go,
Bruckheimer
and
movies.
And Go and stuff. Yeah. So you get the setup. Okay, there's this guy that robs banks. He's kind of kooky, and he's stealing from the mafia. So he's, you know, and then Batman puts it pretty clearly when Gordon's kind of like, looks like this Joker guy was the one that robbed this bank, and
he says,
like,
him again.
You know, whatever. He's one man, but we can take down the mafia. Right. He's incidental. He's not someone anyone's worried about at the beginning. They haven't done this thing where it's like, oh no, the Joker's the big crazy caped guy. You know. The costumed super villain that's running around, and so we need to deal with him. He's not even a big deal. He's not even on the radar. He's at the beginning, and then he isn't in it for like 40 minutes or something. There's the whole thing where he's trying to bust the mafia, to bring them all in, which means that they need the money guy, which is this Chinese company that they're using.
Well, he does come in right after that.
Yeah,
though.
A little bit after, and then offers
which was a deal. A fantastic scene. I don't know what the atmosphere was like. There, when you see the first showing of any movie, there were, I mean, there were both theaters were utterly 100% packed last night, and it was all a bunch of teeming fanboys and then high school kids. Like, that's all it was. Yeah. Like, I saw probably like 20 people I know up there last night, and they kept coming over to our part of the line and hanging out, and then like we would go over to another part of the line, and like my sister, I didn't know my sister was gonna be there, and a bunch of her friends, and like tons of people were there.
It's odd.
And
just buying into the hype, I guess.
And, I don't know. Not a everyone, Batman everyone fan. Loved, wanted to go see it.
And, taking my oxygen.
And when the first time you really see how funny that, I mean, the Heath Ledger character was utterly, you know, you hear all the hyperbole before something comes out, and what really pissed me off is that everyone's like, oh, the rumors are that he could be up for an Oscar nomination, and they say that before the movie was even screened for anybody. No critics or anyone had seen the movie at that point. So you start thinking, this is garbage, you know? But he was really that incredible, and that was utterly mind-blowing.
As I was done watching, I'm like, man, if anything, one should get like a pop. He was really good. Like, it's just it's a fucking tragedy that he's dead. He was
fantastic. Yeah, seriously. I mean,
because that was just really good. Because it's so hard. It's got to be so hard for an actor to do a role like that, because it's all about being overblown and self-indulgent. Yeah. But at the same time, there has to be like a logic to it and a basis for the actions. Mm-hmm. So that it's, I mean, you're riding the razor's edge of just ridiculousness there, where it's supposed to be ridiculous, but it, I mean, gosh, what so a mindfuck.
In the theater, like, I mean, I don't know how people reacted when you saw it, or how I would have reacted if I was watching it alone, but when he puts that pencil on the table,
yeah,
and then he says, you want to see magic trick, and the tough comes over, and he slams his head into it, and he goes, disappears. Like, just kind of like nonchalantly, yeah, you know, like, people exploded every time
he people laughed
and
utter that.
Laughter, and like, and I think there were a bunch of moments that were more meant to be frightening, where people were laughing, but I think that was just the duality of that role.
It's the dark, sick humor of the Joker. I mean, one of the old animated series episodes, which, I mean, I don't know what Ledger did. I mean, I'd heard that he looked at the Alan Moore stuff. What is it? The Killing Joke. Is that the one?
Yeah.
That sort of gives into the backstory a little and everything, but some of the Mark Hamill Joker stuff from the animated series, is you can see bits of it there, because that was probably the first, I mean, that had the most to his character, because there was just like the most number of episodes with the Joker doing things, and you could see sort of his craziness. And there's one where like he pushes one of his henchmen into a bunch of like jackals that he's got, or dogs that he's got that are hyenas. And then, you know, because the guy asked a dumb question. And then later on, when he's, like, telling them all what's going to happen, the guy's all bandaged up, and he's like, any questions, Murphy? And, like, my brother and I were watching that episode, and we just cracked up, because it's just, he's just such a, he's such a dingbat.
Right.
But yeah, the pencil one was good. That was really good.
He just did a few, like,
no, the also,
the fact that the bank robbery was all built around every other single guy killing each other when their job was done.
Uh-huh.
Like, that was just, it's just such a, like, brilliant idea for somebody who's that, Not evil, but has this really weird idealism, and like, I mean, he's obviously has a sanity problem.
Well, he's a straight up nihilist, which they make pretty apparent towards the end. But I mean, like, he has his plan based on sort of betrayal and chaos, but it is a plan, and so that gets into his whole like, there's no plans, right? I'm just, and that's also kind of an interesting contradiction in his own character. But yeah, he's like, I was supposed to kill the bus driver. He's like, what? With the bus driver? As he's kind of getting things just aligned just right
for the guy to get. And the bus smashes through the wall and hits him,
And then how the string for the thing is connected to his coat.
Right.
So it just kind of drags off as he sort of waddles away. I mean, just those little things were great. And how he's rigged to blow when he goes to see all the guys. But then how he kind of keeps playing with it.
Yeah, like, right.
Like what? Like, am I going to do this? Or, you know?
I thought the funniest thing was I thought seeing him in a nurse's outfit would be, I mean, anyone else's hands, that would have been like really stupid looking, but it was actually still very frightening and funny at the same time. Christopher Nolan is such a, I hate to use this word, but genius with this sort of thing. Like,
well, he's got the right people. That's a stellar cast. Like, and in the first one it was, but I mean, this movie is just huge. I mean, it's not all green screen. It's not Robert Rodriguez. No. And so I'm sitting here watching it, and I'm like, this is what a big movie is. This is why it's epic. It's like Heat. They haven't made a big movie like this, a big action crime drama movie like this that felt like it was in a real world since like the 90s, since something like Heat. Honestly, I mean, you know, you're seeing the scope of things. They're blowing real stuff up.
Right.
I mean, they're going to actual places to do things. It's not just a bunch of running around in a green screen with, you know, stylistic color coding.
Right.
So that I loved about it, because it's just set in this completely sort of realistic world. So I guess the next section is it's just a mafia war. Not really even a mafia war, but they're all... The mafia is pretty much all organized at that point. When the Joker goes to meet them, they're having like a sit-down in a
kitchen somewhere. Yeah, all the different, kitchen the different gangs in there, yeah.
And yeah. And basically...
Which he calls their group therapy session. Yeah. And then, it went... I mean, everything he said was just kind of funny in that part, especially when he says something about how, despite what the television says, like, he referred to the guy as the television.
As the television,
you know, like,
yeah.
Like, you're so stupid to be listening to this guy who's not even here. But one of the things about that was that I think it's a testament to how good this movie was, that despite the fact that you go away for 20 minutes to a different part of the world to have something almost unrelated to the plot of the movie happen, and it still completely holds interest, was fantastic. Well,
was a pretty straightforward gimmick, though. That was just another, like... I mean, that was Mission Impossible 3
just,
or whatever.
It was just some kind of
tricky
skyscraper
gadget thing. And as I'm sitting there watching it, towards the end, I'm sitting through the credits, you know, in case they do something at the end, which fucking movies have got to... They got to just say yay or nay on that, because I get sick of it. But
You get warned if there's something behind it. They'll tell you that.
They don't in the movie.
Not in the movie, but I mean, if you read anything,
I know. I just don't like to read anything.
And
but
not even reviews, you know, just read stuff on like Rotten Tomatoes. And
But that whole thing to me seems like that part they could have done without, because it is kind of long. It's 2.5 hours long. Mm-hmm. Now it holds you the whole time for the most part, but that's still like physically a long time to be sitting down looking at a screen at once. And that whole sequence was kind of an unnecessary sequence, but he does show like sort of this like you said, the scale and
right.
the scope of,
and
I think it also ingrains something that it's something he can do that they can't do.
I think it also puts it
in terms of the cops versus Batman.
I think it also it's another attempt to place it in a real world, because in any other superhero movie you have it confined to this made up city.
Yeah.
And then you have this where he's obviously going to a real city in the other part of the world. There's no other superheroes in this world. It's just him, you know? Like, I think it's ballsy.
You didn't call Superman and have him
exactly, yeah. I mean, they put this in, they honestly did put this in a real world. And I think one of the greatest testaments to it is that they have, as of yet, done completely just, you do the human bad guy thing. You don't put anything supernatural, fantastic, mm-hmm. space. Any
little sci-fi
like
with the gadgets.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But the way they did it was not completely ridiculous. I thought as soon as I saw his little eye things come down in the final act, I was like, oh, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
And then it was incredible. That final scene when he rushes through the building.
That was just action.
But here's what was great about that. And I think they did this on purpose, because to show the clunkiness of the old suit.
Yeah.
The first fight scene sucked.
Yeah.
It really did. It was not exciting at all. It's first time you see Batman, you're like, and I was like, I was worried at that point, because I was like, this really just, I mean, the fight scene just kind of threw me out of it.
Yeah.
And then each one gets progressively more realistic as his suit keeps getting...
Well, he modifies it.
He makes it
lighter, but it's more vulnerable.
Right. Which kind of also leaves you worried every time, like, because looks like, you know, he gets stabbed with the boot knife at one point, and then, like, you know, he gets shot at the end of it, and the whole time you're thinking, since they told us this, you know, now he might be vulnerable to these things that happen. Whereas before, you realize that, oh, Batman gets shot, he's fine, you know, that sort of thing. Did you see the animated ones?
Yeah, I saw all
okay,
of
so,
this last night.
And those are technically supposed to kind of link the two a little
they're
bit.
They're just more, like, I think more to develop the world,
it
the
is,
story.
And it's set in the same thing.
And Goyer wrote the one that has the Scarecrow in it.
Right.
Or he came up with the story.
Right.
And Goyer, with Nolan, developed the story for both this one and the second one.
Mm-hmm.
Nolan and his brother did the screenplay for this one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know what that means necessarily. His brother has been involved on a lot of the stories that he's worked on, that Nolan's worked on before.
Yeah, he wrote Memento and stuff like that. I think they also wrote Insomnia together.
I had heard bad things about, not bad things, but I'd heard like kind of like meh things about the anime, and I was like, okay,
My brother and his friend didn't like it before I watched it. They told me that they didn't like it. But I liked, for instance, that the Man Croc guy, that they explained before Killer you Croc. See him, the Killer Croc, they explained that he's got a skin condition, and he's filed his teeth down, and exactly. He had like gigantism or something like that. And so, but like, it takes away from like the mutant type thing and just lets you know that
that's what he is.
Yeah,
right. I mean, Batman, by and large, even in the animated series, and then this became why a lot of people fell off from the animated series as it got into its fourth season and started blending with Superman and everything else. Batman, by and large, has always been very real world based. It's actual criminals. The villains are. They're crazy people with gimmicks. In the case of the Penguin, they're kind of he's an intellectual sort of guy that's all about like fancy rich stuff. And at one point, he goes straight and has his own club, and that's his thing. The Joker is just like a former hood or whatever that's lost his mind and is very clever and like criminal, insane genius.
Right.
In this movie, I think he gives a little of his backstory, which that seems a little expository and forced when he's just sort of doing that all of a sudden.
But none of that was real. You realize that he told the story three times and it changed every time. He was never telling the truth.
I don't remember him getting the story more than once. He started to try and tell the story twice.
No, he was the first time he said the thing about his dad. The second time he said a thing about his wife, you didn't hear it when he told Rachel in the middle.
Oh no! Yeah. But that was a different thing because he never said that his dad cut him. He said his dad cut his mom.
No. He explained that his dad cut him. That there was that he says that his dad turned to him, put the knife in his mouth. He said that. He says that. When he's talking to the black gangster guy.
Oh, okay.
So he changes the story and then he starts to tell it a third time and doesn't. You know, yeah, Batman cuts him off because he just doesn't give a crap.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I was wondering if they were actually going to go so far as to give some sort of hint at his background, and I think the fact that they didn't was actually kind of refreshing.
One thing that they did do was that he was a very serious guy in his former life, whatever it was.
Yeah, right.
That both his abusive father, that part's probably
that's
real.
Probably true. Yeah.
Wife.
He mentions the father
wife that was injured based on some sort of criminal thing
sure.
that didn't involve him,
mm-hmm.
so he probably wasn't a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
He was probably a very
very
intelligent, well-minded,
yeah.
like probably like a chess genius
and
style.
And these things like culminated into this sort of thing for him with the insanity
with everything just going haywire.
But his portrayal of someone where I mean, usually it's hard to show how deep someone like that can be, or I mean, maybe it's just a testament to his acting. But usually you have to give some sort of reason, motivation, whatever. And they just completely hold off on that purposefully, and it
until well they do at the end.
Well, I mean he says what he wants, but I mean what's the reason behind that? You know, he wants this chaos with he wants this perpetual.
It's an ideological thing. It's he's a nihilist. He burns the money. He doesn't believe.
Yeah, well, I mean,
when he's talking to Dent at the end,
he wants the chaos. But I mean,
when
why
he convinces
does he want
Dent not to kill him,
yeah.
pretty much. Is why is you know it's anarchy. It's this sense that you are schemers and the criminals are schemers, and this is back and forthism. It's a never ending boring cycle of whatever, and this is no fun.
But he didn't want. But the thing is, like they show different times in the film. He didn't care if somebody killed him. I don't think he convinced Dent not to kill him. I think
he
expected that
50%
of the odds were that he was going to die. He didn't care.
But that was also because he doesn't plan, you know, because he's not, just schemes.
I don't know, he obviously
but he plans about, like,
planned a lot, you
plans,
know.
Exactly, that was the duality, is that he has to deal with, is that you do have to plan to not plan, you know?
He said something about
if you're an anarchist,
look what I did with a
group,
few drums of oil and some bullets, but,
yeah.
I mean, he really did an incredible amount with that because
had a lot of drums
lot
of oil
to
and
plan,
bullets,
yeah.
And he's got the line about how gasoline's cheap, which I thought was funny.
Yeah.
Not in an intentional
cheap,
way.
It's cheap compared to like C4.
I guess. where are we into the story? I think as the story evolves, it becomes basically they're able to get all these mafia guys into pretty much arrested. They're able to start proceedings on it, and Dent, the new hotshot lawyer, is ready, or a district attorney is ready to do that, and they've built the case with the help of Batman. And basically Wayne's looking at it and saying, well, We're good. Mm-hmm. And this is the real world style Batman, where, you know, he became this so that he could stop this organized crime that was preying on the city,
right,
and everything else. It's not like he still has to, he's not like he's sitting there going, oh, well, I still need to be Batman because there's the Riddler and the Penguin, and you know, this whole rogues gallery. It's on a rotating list of being released.
But I like from that Arkham. It wasn't just that. It was that they tied in the reason from the first one, which is that
he found something
he would give up this life for.
Mm-hmm.
If he felt someone else could take up the mantle and take up this cause
that he's
obsessed about. And so the fact that that's the thing that drives him, like they gave him a very human reason to want to quit the thing. Like it's that important to him, you know? And I think that's something that you normally wouldn't see. And I thought that every time they try to,
well, normally it would be out of anger.
Yeah.
It would be out of, like, frustration, and he would give up. It would be...
And so it's like he was trying to choose his Bruce Wayne life over the Batman life.
Which is very human, because if you're a billionaire playboy, I mean, at a certain point, you're going to be like, yeah, my parents were murdered, but I took a few for the team, and I did the Batman thing, and I don't want to do this anymore. And not out of a... that's the same reason that something like Spider-Man 2 had in it, is this whole, like, I don't want to do this anymore, and maybe I don't have to, and I'll have a better life if I don't. Mm-hmm. They never even really gave Batman a chance to do that, which is what I liked, because that would have either been uninteresting, or it would have just been him.
And then just like Red Belt and Gone Baby Gone, like his own personal code it becomes extremely important, and especially to the plot, because the reason, I mean, he's even though he's trying to get back out, he's sucked back in by the mad dealings of one person, and he still refuses to kill him.
Yeah. But
he had multiple chances to do so.
Oh, yeah.
And it hurts him multiple times. I guess it didn't really hurt him when he skids out on his bike and everything, because Gordon was luckily there, you know, and all that stuff.
But. Yeah, it almost did. No, I mean, that's consistent too, though. Even in the animated series... Mm-hmm. The Joker was the only one that it was clear on a handful of occasions that he
was pretty close to killing.
Would just kill. And he does kill him in the end, I think. He killed him in... they revealed that he did kill him. No, maybe he didn't.
Are you talking about, like, the Mask of the Phantasm?
No. In the Batman Beyond movie, Return of the Joker, where they explain how he kidnapped Tim Drake and drove him insane and everything. I think the Joker ends up falling off. It becomes one of those, like, he dies, but it's not entirely his fault. Like, you know,
Moriarty.
Yeah, exactly. Dying, but not that kind of crap. That's the whole thing, is that he knows that one thing, is that one rule, that incorruptible aspect, because that does, you know, that tarnishes him beyond anything. If he does do that, you know, he'll catch him. He'll destroy their rights to do all that other stuff, but he won't kill him, and he'll bring him to the cops so able they can be processed.
Throughout the course of this thing, they were able to take... There's a lot of characters in this thing. It's, you know, Fox has his own kind of storyline thing where he's got his own little arc where, like, he becomes concerned with the direction Bruce is going in his obsessive quest to stop this guy. And I felt that, like, if there was any sort of weak character at all... It was Alfred who just kind of shows up and dispenses some advice.
Which is pretty much all Alfred really ever does. Unless you're in a position where, you know, you really need to beat Batman up, and then Alfred's going to, like, be putting him back together. But I was sitting there thinking, like, yeah, boy, Michael Caine's a little underused. I mean, the first one, he was just kind of there to be quippy, and he did a little more because he helped him start with it. But he's got the Burma story.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the Burma's war zone story.
Right.
And that... basically is enough reason for him to still be a pretty strong character in that. And remember the original teaser they released? It was just audio? It was mostly Alfred talking.
I know, that's all he does in the movie.
But what he says to Wayne...
Large chunks of things that are, like, you know, life lessons. And I don't think it was a negative thing, but I think if there was anything that was weak that I got a little at point, was thinking, like, drew me out of it, it was that. Also, at the very end... Bale's one of my friends complains about Bale's Batman voice.
Yeah, the voice is...
Because, I mean, they did it on purpose because they want to show that in a real world, this guy couldn't just talk like he normally does and people wouldn't recognize
him. Well, and that's the whole thing is that Batman does do that. He does
He lowers it a little bit, but I mean, like, the guy who did the voice in the animated series just lowered it a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
Kevin Connolly is the best Batman voice.
And so with Christian Bale, he has to go to this completely, almost inaudible grumble to do that. And there were
what are you doing?
Were a few times where he said lines where he was like, he had to like stop for breath in the middle of it because he was forcing so much out to do the thing. When he's talking to the Joker at the very end, where it became a little more like ridiculous. I'm trying to think of anything negative. No,
I agree with you on. I took umbrage with the redesign of the suit. It looked the contours and the forms of the face looked a little less sharp, and I didn't like it. It looked a little more plasticky.
Right.
For the mask, I liked the first Batman's mask a lot. I mean, obviously,
right. Well, the reason why they did that, I thought the weirdest thing about it is the big jaw area, which is meant to just be the thing because it's a helmet and it's on a swivel, and that way he can actually move it and turn his head.
Yeah.
I just think that I don't know. Maybe we should go back into the plot because I keep wanting to talk about things that happened toward the end of it.
Well, okay. So then all the criminals are about to be done for, get arrested, be properly prosecuted because they built a proper case with the help of Batman and so forth, which I guess can still build an entirely proper case. Obviously, in the real world, when a vigilante helped bring somebody in and, you know, did not have just cause and so forth, and or you know, didn't have the proper warrants to kick down a door and bring in evidence, I don't know how that works. If evidence just shows up on a policeman's desk, I guess it's okay. And, you know, who's to say that they didn't have an informant or whatever that did it for him? And at that point is when the criminals that the Joker said, "Hey, I'll take out Batman for you," earlier, and they told him to go to hell, their backs against the wall. They got no choice. Like, we need this guy taken out. Mm-hmm. And I think the Joker kind of acts on his own at that point because he realizes, well, either way, I get rid of the criminals that are just a pain in the ass, too.
Right. Well,
I can start controlling things.
Yeah, he says something about that.
Not even controlling, but I can, I'm in charge.
Yeah. Ah, ha, ha, you know? And he, when he comes on that TV show with Anthony Michael Hall and he talks and he says, you know, I imagine this world that was free of Batman and the criminals could do with him and all this stuff, and he's like, and it was boring. And so, like, you can tell that, I mean, from the very beginning, he was, you know, he was completely playing them, which is obvious.
Yeah.
But just the fact that he doesn't want crime to be something that happens. He wants people to, I guess he just wants people to be like him and just lose it or something like that.
He just doesn't, the schemes.
Yeah.
People that will use other people, people that will control things underhandedly and so forth. I mean, that's the closest thing to the idealism of the Joker, I guess, that I can think of, is that his whole thing is shit happens. I mean, in the Alan Moore thing, you know, it's did you ever just have a bad day? A day that was so bad that it would convince you that, you know, it doesn't make any sense to try and have a well-structured plan. You just do what you want all the time. And
Joker's Cartman.
And that's basically that. Yes, on some level.
And your brother. Joker's a mixture of your brother.
So the Joker's now really fully moving into his plans, and his plans involve taking out the city schemers, the mayor, the district attorney Harvey Dent, the police commissioner, and the judge. I guess he takes out this judge that was going to see the case and put all these mobsters away. So he does all that, and that allows, I guess, the mobsters to kind of not be prosecuted for the time being, and so then they're in a position to, you know, kind of listen to the Joker on some level.
Right.
And then things really get rolling. I mean, the police commissioner gets killed, and Harvey Dent is being gone after on multiple occasions. And in the process of that, the police and Batman set up a scheme. That part seemed a little haywire and thin, because they end up capturing the Joker after this crazy thing with bazookas, and a lot of cops die.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute. And then the cops are kind of like, yeah, you know, the plan finally worked. And it's like, what, you mean like that whole thing was part of your plan? I think maybe just the end result was, and they lucked out that it all worked out, because, I mean, The Batmobile gets trashed, which is sort of the obligatory thing that has to happen in any second movie, mm-hmm. or even in, I mean, Wayne Manor got trashed in the first one, but, you know, stuff has to get trashed in the movie. Once you kick it up to movies, you have to trash stuff so you can have new stuff.
Right.
You have to destroy the Enterprise D at the end of Generations so that that way you can have an all new ship for the next movie, mm-hmm. and for the movie franchise. And so we'll have a whole new Batmobile in Batman 3, The Search for Curly's Gold.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that whole thing, I mean, you know, in a movie this complicated with this many sort of plans and schemes and height and twists and turns, you're gonna find some stuff that's you could be a little incredulous about. But that's just the nature of an action drama. Anything is that you sit there and you psychoanalyze every little piece and you're like, this is insane. And then you properly analyze it and you're like, oh, okay, it's still pretty difficult to see how all this stuff would have happened in this way. But
yeah.
So they capture the Joker. They got him in lockdown, and it's all part of his plan, you know, as right. as in any case. Mickey Kossmeyer ends up being dumb.
Mm-hmm.
He's Stevens,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, I'm a 20-year vet, Joe, you know. I know right. that you're a freak, and you're not going to do anything to me, but then he says just enough. He gets him just
yeah,
right,
yeah, yeah.
And then it's like, hey, Mickey, you know how he's leaning against that windowsill there with those two glass. And you can see the giant chunk of sharp glass, like right, on multiple yeah. occasions? Probably not best that you just
yeah.
walk up to him and do that. The Joker takes out, like, I mean, a lot of cops die in this movie. Mm. This is a serious, like, this is kind of, this is essentially like Empire Strikes Back of Batman.
It really
Batman
is, and I thought that halfway through. I thought, this is exactly like Empire Strikes Back, because you just, you take this world that was created where you expect this hierarchy of good people, kind of bureaucrats that he has to get past to do all these things.
Uh-huh.
But then this new guy comes in and kills off all the bureaucrats and
like,
stuff.
Like, quickly.
And, yeah, like... And it just completely throws this whole world upside down.
And then just starts blowing up buildings left and right and everything else. It's nutsoid.